Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Wednesday morning, February 18th. 26 degrees and snowing heavily here in Old Town Park City, 31 degrees in the Heber Valley. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, it's meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Wednesday, KPCW listeners. We're looking at your forecast for today. A winter storm continues to make its way through the area. We're talking about quite a bit of snow, the potential of 8 to 14 inches across the Wasatch Back. As we go throughout the day, that snow will continue to increase throughout the daylight hours. Temperatures will climb into the 30s for highs, but overall expect those numbers to not warm up too much with that winter storm warning in effect for that accumulating snow through the day. As we go throughout tonight, that snow will start to taper off, but some frigid temperatures filter in. Look for single digits to kick off your morning on your Thursday, so it's going to be quite frigid out there with high temperatures only climbing into the mid-20s for us in the Park City area. Highs will climb into the low 30s in the Heber Valley. Once we get into your Friday, we'll have another storm system moving by, primarily affecting central and southern Utah, but there will be a chance of some light snow accumulations with that system. Temperatures start off into the teens on Friday morning with those highs in the mid-20s. Friday afternoon in Park City, we'll see those highs in the low 30s in the Heber Valley. As we go into the weekend, we'll finally get a little break from all the active weather. We're looking at mostly sunny to partly sunny skies. Temperatures again starting off in the single digits for morning low temperatures. We'll see those highs only climbing into the 30s to around the low 40s as we head into your Sunday. So overall, a pretty chilly weekend, especially considering what we've seen for most of this season. As we head into next week, we'll start off with fairly quiet conditions, but another storm system begins to approach. As we get towards next Tuesday, that could bring us some late day rain or maybe a rain-snow mix for us in the Heber Valley, with temperatures climbing into the low 40s with another chance of some accumulating snow as we get towards next Tuesday night in the Park City area. Too early for details, but it is a forecast that we'll keep a close eye on in the coming days. That's kind of the latest forecast for you here as we go throughout the day. Watch out for those winter conditions as that winter storm warning remains in effect. We'll have the latest update on your forecast throughout the day, but that's the latest for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes with a look at your forecast.
And with a look into the backcountry, on the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Center, we've got Brooke on the line. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie. Yeah, we issued an avalanche warning this morning, which is what we use when extremely hazardous or unusual avalanche conditions exist. So today, with our high danger, we're recommending that folks stay out of avalanche terrain. So that's sticking to slopes less than 30 degrees and staying well away from slopes connect to or below anything steeper than 30 degrees, and being aware of who's above and below you.
Okay. And I know that we're going to get our weekend warriors out because the weekend's supposed to be pretty nice. So the danger remains as the snow keeps falling and the wind blows.
Right. So we're seeing along the Park City ridgeline up to a little more than a foot of additional snow that'll fall by tonight, and there'll be a little more into tomorrow morning. That being said, the snow will turn off a bit. But most avalanche accidents do happen in the first clearing after a stormy period. So we'll still see a pretty meaty avalanche danger heading into the weekend and keeping up on our toes, looking out for accidents.
Okay, people, you need to know before you go, so please be safe. Thanks, Brooke. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with University of Utah Professor of Atmospheric Sciences, Dr. Kevin Perry. He has details on a new collaborative study that provides policymakers and the public with the most comprehensive assessment to date of potential dust control options for the Great Salt Lake. President of the Park City Newcomers Club, Alyssa Harbin, and President-elect Kathy Van Dyke with details on plans to celebrate the club's 30th anniversary. And from Heber City, Mayor Heidi Franco calling in with an update on city issues. Then stay tuned for The Mountain Life. Today's guests include Nordic gurus Charlie Sturgis and Dave Hanscom, talking trail access and this year's push to keep skiing alive with low snow, and why Nordic skiing is core to the identity of a true ski town. Then author Jonathan Tepper presents a memoir of radical compassion as he shares his story of being raised by missionary parents in Madrid in one of the most notorious heroin slums. His book is titled Shooting Up, a memoir of love, loss, and addiction. All of that coming up on The Mountain Life, heard, of course, every Wednesday from 9 to 10. Well, taking a look at some local news now, two new towns are proposed in Wasatch County. The state says one can now begin incorporation. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports the other didn't meet all legal requirements, but gets another chance.
Utah Lieutenant Governor Deidre Henderson said Monday, Wasatch Highlands, 2,700 acres east of Heber, can begin the journey to become a town. It's a preliminary municipality, a type of town allowed by a 2024 state law. That says up to three landowners can build and form a town in areas without residents or existing development. Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaugh said on KPCW's Local News Hour Tuesday, Philo Development told the county it would apply for a town. The land in question was once part of a larger development proposal, which both Heber and Wasatch County passed on. That's now been split in two. Philo's town would have over 700 homes, a hotel, glamping, and shopping. Graybaugh says the county is processing a separate bid from the same developer on another 700 acres of state-owned trust lands.
We've been working, you know, for the last, I don't know, maybe 8 months on 144 units adjacent to this preliminary municipality.
Philo Development previously told KPCW it's not about bypassing county processes, but instead making sure the project stays on track to help meet statewide housing supply goals and protect natural open space. The state will solicit consultants to study whether Wasatch Highlands is feasible, meaning whether it could raise enough taxes to provide municipal services. Graybaugh says he was not expecting the second preliminary municipality called Bear Canyon, about 2,300 acres near the bottom of the Alpine Loop in Provo Canyon at the Utah-Wasatch County line.
I know that the property owner in Provo Canyon has had ambitions to develop that property. That hasn't been in alignment with the direction the council felt. You know, some of our preservation zones, we wanted to keep them as they were.
Bear Canyon cannot start the incorporation process yet. The lieutenant governor determined that Bear Canyon includes six landowners, three more than the maximum, but Utah law gives the landowners who are members of the Alt family a second chance. They have until May 14th to revise and resubmit their application. Evan Alt and California-based attorney Stephen Austin, who are listed as sponsors of the Bear Canyon Incorporation, had not responded to requests for comment as of Tuesday evening. It's unclear if they'll dispute the lieutenant governor's findings or submit a new application with no more than three landowners. Documents show the Alt family proposes a resort community with about 1,000 residential units, a mix of lodging, homes, and rentals, plus a general store.
This is something that I think is always going to be at issue is counties tend to be more rural, more spread out, and our focus is on those lower density areas. And the state seems interested in pursuing more aggressive growth than what counties are naturally geared for.
The 2024 law that allows for preliminary municipalities only permits two such applications to proceed statewide each year. Two other applications came in after Bear Canyon and Wasatch Highlands and therefore could not be considered. They include another in Wasatch County south of Wallsburg and one in Summit County's Browns Canyon. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
As declining water levels in the Great Salt Lake continue to expose vast areas of lake bed to wind erosion, a new collaborative study led by University of Utah Professor of Atmospheric Sciences, Dr. Kevin Perry, provides policymakers, agency leaders, and the public with the most comprehensive assessment to date of potential dust control options for the Great Salt Lake. Dr. Perry joins me now on the phone. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, so give us the background of the study. I mean, I guess who commissioned it? Of course, as you know, sometimes we see studies paid for by those who stand most to profit. You know, when we think of secondhand smoke studies paid for by tobacco companies. Are you satisfied the study was done impartially?
Yeah, so this was a study that was funded by the state of Utah. They commissioned about 12 different studies to try and fill gaps in important knowledge for Great Salt Lake, and this is one of those studies that was funded to try and figure out what we might be able to do about dust in the option, in the case that we actually continue to have low lake levels.
Yeah, so what was this specific study then, if it's just one of 12?
So this one was just focusing in on trying to identify the options that we have for dust control, but there were several others that were looking at in-stream flows and looking at groundwater, and there was a whole bunch of things associated with birds and trying to understand the economics of the lake as well.
Yeah. So you were setting out then to identify options for dust control. That makes the assumption that water levels aren't coming back?
Not necessarily. So the state is just trying to do its due diligence, and they're obviously trying everything they can to restore the lake to health. But the problem is even if we restore the lake to healthy levels, there will still be exposed lake bed out there, and we don't know whether or not the exposed lake bed that will remain even after we restore the lake to healthy levels could pose a potential problem to the residents or not.
Yeah. Now, I believe the study examined 12 potential dust control measures. Do they all require more water?
Only half of the dust mitigation options required water. Half of them did not require water at all. And you say, how can you control dust without water? Well, there's different things that you can do. One of the things is to slow the wind speed down by putting obstacles on the lake bed. Another is to cover up the lake bed with gravel. You could also do tillage, which roughens the surface significantly. All of these are very invasive and very costly, but they are effective.
More costly than putting more water in the lake?
Actually, much more costly than putting water in the lake. The cheapest option for doing the dust mitigation in this report is at least $3 billion over the next 50 years, and the most expensive being over $30 billion.
Whoa. And why, I guess, did the study make any kind of recommendation then, I mean, in terms of moving forward?
So the study, it's beyond the scope of the study to identify, you know, which of these techniques would be most well-suited for Great Salt Lake. But I think the primary recommendation of the study is to let lawmakers know how incredibly expensive, invasive the engineered solutions are, and that they should double down on trying to focus in on lake restoration and getting dust control as a co-benefit for saving the lake.
All right. It sounds like we finally have some air monitors out there near the lake to learn more about what's happening.
Yeah, so monitoring the air quality is one of the most important things on a dust control project. And basically, the state is in the process of installing more than 15 new monitors around Great Salt Lake so that we'll be able to answer the questions of which communities are most impacted, how frequent are the dust events, how severe are they, do they in fact pose a health hazard or not. If the dust coming off the lake is so infrequent and at low concentrations that it doesn't pose a health hazard, then obviously a multi-billion dollar dust mitigation program wouldn't be warranted.
Yeah. And as we know, this is basically a dead-end lake, right? Everything that has flowed into it over the years is still there. So are the toxic materials that we're talking about here due to environmental pollution, or are they just naturally occurring in the lake?
It's actually both. You are correct to say that the lake is kind of the bottom of the basin, and everything that we have done in this area over the last 150 years, there's a record of it in the bottom of Great Salt Lake. You don't have to dig down very far to find lead from leaded gasoline back in the 1970s and earlier. But all of that material is there in the lake bed, and when the winds are strong and the lake bed is dry, that material, you know, is blown off the lake and it back into the surrounding communities. A lot of it's natural, but a lot of it's industrial as well.
You know, we heard a lot about the dust dangers just recently during the Sundance Film Festival when the director of the film The Lake was making the media rounds. Her film says that unless we bring back the lake water levels, we're in trouble. I mean, I guess, do you agree with that?
Yeah, certainly. There are many reasons to restore the lake. There's the ecological, you know, 13 million birds rely upon the lake each year. And there's the economic. The lake, you know, drives the economy of northern Utah to the tune of about $1.3 billion. The lake provides snow for our ski areas, which are so desperately in need right now. And the lake also protects the human health by keeping the dust tamped down. So there are many, many reasons why we need to keep the lake, restore it back to health.
Yeah. And the issue of liability she brought up in her film, basically saying, you know, by monitoring the air quality and then knowing what's there and what's dangerous and not doing anything about it, then who becomes liable for anyone who may be exposed to it?
Yeah, so up until this point, the state hasn't had a robust monitoring network, so we didn't really know the answers. But the state has dedicated itself to finding the answer for all Utahns so that we will know in a couple of years whether or not the dust from the lake poses a problem. And if it does pose a problem, then the state will be legally obligated to do something about it.
Okay, so where do all of these, are all of the 12 studies done at this point?
So they actually weren't pilot-scale studies. They were just a report basically describing all the different options that could be used at Great Salt Lake. These are things that have been tried extensively at Owens Lake and Salton Sea in California.
I believe this study is available to read and download on a couple of websites. I can make sure that those links are provided. What else do you think our listeners should know about this study?
I think the most important thing is that we need to monitor the air quality to determine whether or not the dust poses an actual health hazard. There's a lot of hyperbole out there about toxic dust and other sorts of things. And there are things in the dust that we certainly don't want to be exposed to on a regular basis. But we really need, as scientists and policymakers, make informed policy decisions about not spending resources unless it's actually warranted by the data. So it's super important that we're actually going to be monitoring the air quality in the communities that are most vulnerable to Great Salt Lake dust.
Okay, so what's the process now going forward?
So going forward, the state is currently installing all of the air monitoring equipment. I've been told that it will be all in place by the end of 2026. And then they'll be monitoring the air quality. And at the same time, the state will be reviewing this this report and trying to determine if there are any pilot scale projects that should be done on a small basis, just to try and figure out how they actually work at Great Salt Lake.
Okay. Dr. Kevin Perry, appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Dr. Kevin Perry, again, is a University of Utah professor of atmospheric science. Well, the National Ability Center is teaming up with Park City Mountain to host a night of skiing under the lights while raising money for the center's programs. All of the proceeds from the Friday Night Lights Ski-A-Thon will benefit the dozens of programs offered by the National Ability Center. NAC CEO Willie Ford says the event is the winter version of the center's Summit Bike Challenge, where hundreds of participants raise money while having fun. Skiers and riders will pay $50 to participate.
It includes access to ski under the lights. We'll have some great opportunity drawings. We'll have some music. But most importantly, it's just the community coming together skiing under the lights, which is not that common of a thing to do these days. So let's get together and have fun on payday.
Participants are also encouraged to begin forming fundraising teams.
If you sign up and you want to join us, you go to our website and you start a team. And the real spirit behind it is a community-based fundraiser, so lots of small donations make a big difference. You sign up your team, and you can start door knocking in your neighborhood or ask your friends or family for small donations to make your impact greater.
The Ski-A-Thon takes place Friday, February 27th, with skiing and riding on the payday and first-time chairlifts between 5 and 8 p.m. The McGrath Mountain Center will be open with music, food, and adult beverages available for purchase. A link to purchase tickets is online at kpcw.org. For those without an Epic Pass, you are able to purchase a lift ticket for an additional $10. Well, Park City speed skater Casey Dawson is the third Park City Nation athlete to take home some hardware in the 2026 Winter Olympics. Dawson and the U.S. men's team pursuit earned silver yesterday, defending their world record time, but falling short of the gold. In the event, two teams of three skaters race around a track 15 times. Dawson, with Ethan Seperin and Emery Lehman, broke their own world record back in November of 2025 at Utah's Olympic Oval in Kearns with a time of just over 3 minutes and 32 seconds. The team was also trying to top the bronze they earned at the 2022 Beijing Games, Dawson's Olympic debut. Team USA went up against Italy in the final at the Milan Speed Skating Stadium yesterday. The race went back and forth between the two teams in the first few laps, with the U.S. leading in laps 4 through 10. But in lap 11, Italy pulled ahead to win by more than 4.5 seconds. The U.S. men still hold the world record for speed. The People's Republic of China finished third after its duel against the Netherlands. Dawson is one of more than 40 athletes representing Park City at the 2026 Winter Games. The Olympics end February 22nd, the Paralympics will begin March 6th. Well, on the phone now, I have Heber City Mayor Heidi Franco. Good morning, Heidi. Thanks for joining us. I know you were feeling a bit under the weather.
Yes, we'll see how this goes this morning. Good morning to you.
Yeah, so were you able to, I know you weren't at the meeting, but were you able to watch it on Zoom?
No, I'm sorry. I had to rest.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's talk about Olympics first. You've been involved in some planning for the 2034 Utah Games. So yes. I'm guessing you've been paying attention to the Milan Cortina Olympics. Any takeaways so far?
Oh, so much fun, right? Mm-hmm. Who in the world is not inspired by the Olympics? We all love it, and we want our Utah athletes especially to shine, which they are, and certainly hope the best for those that have been injured. But yes, we're really looking forward to when they can come here to Utah.
Yeah, at some point I thought you were going to be traveling to Italy. What happened there?
Well, my grandson decided to have a due date moved up, and thankfully he was born Monday night, safe and healthy, and so that's why I decided to not go to Italy this year, but to be able to take care of family instead.
Yeah. All right. Did Heber City consider sending somebody else or just waiting until the 20?
No, they didn't. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the L.A. Games in 2 years. I think that'll be an excellent opportunity, although... Let's see, Colin Hilton was telling me that it really should be the Winter Games, right, that we need to focus on attending in another 4 years. All right, we'll see how that goes. But Dallin Kocher, he represented Wasatch County, and I'm looking forward to hearing all of the things that he learned about.
Okay. So what's your vision for Heber City's involvement in the 2034 Games?
We want to welcome the world. We want to be ready to welcome the world. And so I've met with the county council, other cities, and yes, we did find agreement between the city and the county on our Olympic preparations. We're having open house meetings this Saturday and then next week on the Wednesday and the Friday for our Main Street Park and the amenities that we'd like to build there before the Olympics come. We'd certainly like to do more with downtown revitalization and having that pedestrian walkway from our tabernacle down to our Main Street Park. So it's off of Main Street and the traffic there, but that we would be able to have, you know, that pedestrian flow off of Main Street in our downtown. The county council is very much in agreement with the railroad, and I sit on that railroad board as chair. We want to hopefully get funding to put a railroad spur up to Soldier Hollow off of the existing railroad that goes past it, but not up to it, because we think that'll be a great way to get visitors into Soldier Hollow and then back to the depot. We'd love to get funding for a new depot and plaza area there on the 600 West. And then my personal project is a bridge. We really need a bridge from the railroad depot area across the tracks to the west into the back area of our county fairgrounds, because you know how big that block is, and it's huge to drive around, and it's not pedestrian friendly to walk across because of the track. So we need a bridge to go from the front of 600 West over to the backside Southfield Road where our fairgrounds are, so people can park, walk across the bridge, get into the railroad. We'd also like to have shuttles that will take people from that parking area, you know, to Soldier Hollow, get on the train, go to Soldier Hollow, and then also be able to come into our downtown. I think we've offered that to Midway, too, that they could have shuttles that would go into their downtown from that centralized parking location.
All right. Well, as you mentioned, the city is hosting some open houses next week about plans for that Trailhead Plaza in City Park. So do you feel like the plans are headed in the right direction?
I'm not sure yet. It always comes down to the budget for me and what the people want. I've tried to ask the people in previous surveys last year, were they interested in spending the $20 million in the Main Street Park and really changing it from what we've known all these decades. But now we'll be able to get the people's input again in these next three meetings. We really want to encourage people to come out. I think there was a little bit of confusion that Trailhead Plaza is a proposed name for Main Street Park, but it's not set in stone yet. That's what the people need to weigh in on. There's different levels of amenities with different costs that are going to be proposed at these open houses. So we really appreciate people coming and saying, yes, I like this, or I don't like that, or yes, I do want, you know, whatever input they can give to us on that, because that's going to be a huge change from what we're used to there.
Yeah, so are city staff members taking residents' feedback into account?
Yes, yes. Well, of course, the city council will too. City council has a final say on this and somehow need to fund it. We just did increase our impact fees to pay for some of the amenities, but not all of the amenities there. So I'm really looking forward to hearing what the public wants. I wish we would have 1,000 people that would come out and tell us what they want in Main Street Park, give us ideas on the name of Main Street Park, the name of the pedestrian walkway. We have floated some names, but I don't know if they're sticking or not, but we want this to be something that the people really want.
All right. You have been vocal about the open space and wetlands impacts of UDOT's chosen bypass route. Meanwhile, yes. UDOT's decision could mean big changes for downtown Heber City. So how are you balancing advocating for open space on the Wasatch Open Lands Board with your role as Heber City Mayor?
I do think that we can have both open space preservation and a downtown that's revitalized. I'm just really concerned, though, that UDOT admits themselves that three intersections on Main Street in our downtown, two downtown, one down on 1200 South, that even with either bypass alternative, three of those intersections are still going to be failing or near failing intersections. And to me, that doesn't help our downtown revitalization. So they're saying in the DEIS right now, UDOT's saying that the 100 North to the 100 South intersections and then the 1200 South hub intersection will be failing or near failing in the future, even with a bypass road. And I really want to encourage UDOT to consider that's still their road. I do not know when Heber City will be able to get a law from Congress once ever a bypass road is built. We'd need to get a law from Congress for Heber City to be able to take over Main Street. So UDOT's going to be controlling Main Street as well as any potential new bypass that's built. And I'd really urge UDOT to consider looking at those failing intersections and seeing how we can collaborate together, city to UDOT, to fix that so we can have easier traffic flow for our downtown amenities and commercial businesses that we're trying to revitalize.
All right. Now, the Heber City Council was looking at sending a letter with 7 or 8 suggestions, as I recall. Did that get sent off, and have you heard back?
Yes. No, UDOT is saying that they will answer all of those comments once the comment period's finished. They did come last night, and I had asked the city manager to please read each of those concerns that the city council had. I'm sorry, I don't know how that went. I hope that UDOT will pay attention and work on that. We have tremendous concerns with 1300 South being right there through a residential area, a double-decker highway. We are united to say, please move that further south and then across to Southfield Road so it doesn't impact those neighborhoods, those commercial businesses. It's a very minor change in my perception. Don't know if UDOT will agree or not. We're also concerned about Southfield Road, Industrial Parkway, 300 West, the Daniels Road, Walmart intersection, and how we're losing connectivity there instead of gaining better connectivity. So, yes, those are mostly what those concerns were about.
Yeah. And how will this proposed bypass affect the sewer field south of downtown, I guess, and responding as a leader of the Heber Valley Special Service District?
Yes, as chair of that board, we've been working with UDOT extensively for the last several years. We have a land agent that's also working with them. We worked with them on those acceleration, deacceleration lanes, you know, that are very useful right now on Highway 189. So we know we've got to replace land there. UDOT's looking into options. We are looking into options. We don't know, of course, when funding will be available. We don't know what the timing will be of the bypass road, but we also know that we're not making any more land down here, and we still need land for our disposal, right, of the effluent. So, yes, we're trying to stay ahead of that curve and be able to make sure that our plant operations continue without a hitch.
All right. Let's see. More than 900 bills have been filed in this year's legislative session so far. Any particular issues you're keeping an eye on?
Zoning is always a huge issue for us because the state legislature wants to take more and more zoning authority from cities and counties. We're obviously, you're seeing the effect of these preliminary municipalities that are trying to come into our county and your county. We have real concerns for those because not only are they going to be, maybe a patchwork of their own development, but the impacts, right? I'm also chair of the Heber Light and Power Board, and those are huge impacts. They're costing us quite a bit in bonding and rate increases to be able to keep up with growth on that. So anyway, yeah. Any of those bills, and we know there's many of them that want to take away more zoning authority from cities and counties, those are the ones I'm really concerned about.
Okay, and finally, I wanted to ask you, during work session last night, the City Council reviewed a settlement agreement between Heber City and OK3 Air. That's the company that operates the airport. It comes after a federal lawsuit over the airport. What was the reason for that lawsuit?
The city had decided to bring more competition at the airport, and so the city had changed what is called the airport minimum standards, and we went through quite a public process for that to happen. There's a clause in the original 1990-some-odd lease that the FBO has where they can give feedback and input on those minimum standards, and we did receive their feedback during that public process. But then once the minimum standards were changed to allow another FBO to come in, then we were sued over that by the existing FBO. So that went to a federal court because there were some First Amendment issues also involved in the lawsuit. The First Amendment issues were dismissed, as I recall. But then the City Council at that time, and that would have been back in 2022, 2023, the majority of the City Council decided to settle with the FBO, and the result was the settlement documents that happened back then. That was also in conjunction with the airport vote to expand the airport to the C2 configuration, where it's at a B2 right now. Anyway, that all went down a few years ago, and now with the new council members, Morgan Murdoch being involved, it was time to review that again and see how we're going forward this year.
Yeah, so can you give us just the main terms of the settlement and I guess what needs to happen to ensure that OK3 Air and Heber City can work well together moving forward?
What's on the agenda this year, and that I did send some questions out before I was not able to go last night. My questions are regarding when the FBO will select a campus site there on existing airport land. There's a north campus and a south campus for two FBOs, which are the fixed base operators for the airport. And so I think this year, now that the EIS has been pretty much completed on an old dump site that was there also on the airport property, now that that's been completed and the mitigation, which is very minor, can be done out there, it's been assessed, then it's time for the campus selection. And then after that, the city, according to these settlement documents, can issue an RFP for the second FBO, which would be for the light general aviation type planes, not the jet planes.
Okay. All right.
So
I'm sorry.
Those were my questions to the attorney and the city council last night. I'm not sure if they discussed them. I'm very sorry that I just had to rest last night, and I'm really glad I can talk with you this morning.
Yeah, I appreciate you making the effort. I'm out of time, but thank you for your time.
Thank you. Have a good day.
That's Heber City Mayor Heidi Franco. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, the Newcomers Club of Greater Park City celebrating its 30th anniversary later this month. In the studio with details, I have Club President Lisa Harbin along with President-elect Kathy Van Dyke. Good morning, ladies. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Thank you for having us.
You want to tell us, Lisa, what the roads were like out there? Appreciate you making it in.
I'm just so grateful that there's snow. It's okay to be driving in it.
Okay.
Powder day traffic, so.
Okay, yeah. All right, well, I remember doing a story about when the club first was organized. It sounds like you guys are still going strong. Maybe just, Alisa, tell us a little bit about what the Newcomers Club is and what it is that you do.
So we are primarily a social club, and our purpose is to promote friendship in the community with, you know, shared interests and activities.
Okay. How many members do you have?
Around 560.
Okay. And what does it take to become a member?
Fill out a form and pay dues.
Okay.
It's really easy.
And what are dues? How much are dues?
They're
$60 for a couple and $40 for an individual, and everything's online now. We put a new online system in about 2.5 years ago, and I think it's really helped membership because people can discover us and say, hey, I can check this out. So,
yeah, so what does being a member entitle you to?
Well, you have access to all of the activities, which we have outdoor activities, we have dining activities. We do eat and drink a lot, which is kind of fun. Book clubs. We have great activities that go, you know, to outings, like to the Titanic Museum. We do overnight activities to different Utah parks or Colorado.
Yeah, so how is it decided what activities to do? I mean, just a member says, I got a good idea, and then they need to follow through, or?
There's a structure in place. The key is what we call our first vice presidents. There are two of them. And one of the roles of the organization is just to introduce people to the community and the broader community. So the first VPs are often organizing things to look at the state. They toured the governor's mansion, go down to Salt Lake to the Museum of Modern Art, find interesting things. They have organized a wine tour to Idaho. They've been branching out. So that's one level of activity. And then we have 25 different activity groups. And basically the shape of the club is from the members. So if someone is interested in a particular thing and willing to lead it, then with the permission of the board, they can establish an activity group, and then they form the boundaries. So we've got hiking and snowshoeing, and we've got skiing groups at Deer Valley and at Park City when we have snow, the garden club. So pretty much there's a broad range of interests.
Yeah, I was surprised when I looked at the calendar. It looks like there's something going on most days, and sometimes more than one thing going on each day. So again, it's the members who kind of come up with the activities and run it yourselves.
Yes. Yeah, we're an entirely volunteer organization. So we depend on our members to volunteer, but they're the ones who organize and run and put all the events forward.
Yeah, so what are some of the most popular ones? You've probably mentioned those, then the skiing and the outdoor.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Probably also the first VP events. Those are sort of the bigger ones, like the trip to the Modern Art Museum. Sometimes we went to Hill Air Force Base. You can get 60 to 80 members.
Okay, and you rent a bus, or you just, yeah?
No, carpool.
Travel? Carpool, yeah.
Yes, we're environmentally conscious.
All right, so once, again, if they were to go do something like that, is there an additional fee to that?
Usually not. Occasionally things have fees. Like if there's an entrance required to the art museum, then yes, the members pay the entrance fee. But no, the club doesn't charge.
Yeah.
Any additional fees.
And you're going to get the group rate, right, mm-hmm. when you show up with 60 people. Well, I mean, it seems like a lot of the people who are members are people who have lived here for decades even. I mean, so membership isn't dependent on the fact that you just moved here?
Correct. The Park City Newcomers is different from other newcomers in the sort of the broader organization. In many newcomers, organizations say that a person has to leave after 5 years. We don't. So we have people, I mean, very famous Park City people who have been in Newcomers for 20, 30 years. And so it really is, it's a social club. And you can join, you're free to leave, of course, but you're also free to stay.
Yeah, so it sounds like it's just a lot of fun. Yeah,
so I think so.
Yeah.
One interesting trend, and I don't know if it's because online membership is so easy, but 200 of our members are new in the last year. So we're actually realizing that that's a huge percentage, and we need to think about how to you know, as a young woman who's leading the effort, get people from joining to belonging, which I think is wonderful. So as you become a big group, then you need more outreach and connection. And
yeah, we saw the same thing with the senior center, right? When they put it online, it's like, oh, yeah, this is easy.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, you've got your 30th anniversary coming up. So tell us a little bit about that, Kathy. I think you're kind of in charge of that.
Yeah, I'm chairing the committee. I've got a wonderful group of people working on it. And it's something we've wanted to do, recognizing the anniversary was coming up. Technically, it was last year because the group was founded in 1995. It took us a while to decide exactly what shape this would be, and we've decided to make it what we're calling a reunion. And we're going full on with that theme. We've been researching the newcomers' history, and parallel to that, the 30 years of Park City history. So it's going to be a walkthrough event with looking, we divided the 6 years, the 30 years into 6 5-year periods, and we just are highlighting the formation of the club, when the website first went online. Initially, people met in people's homes, and then we outgrew that, and they met at the Miners Hospital, and then at the Park City Community Church. So we try to identify the milestones in the history of the organization, and then make those visual so people can walk through and actually see. We reached out to, I think we interviewed 24 past presidents, and actually followed up with, you know, sort of their leads to people that were their friends, and tried to gather the history of the organization, and then looking at events in Park City history, because Park City's changed in that 30 years from 1995 to now. Mm-hmm. So we're running that parallel, and then coupling it with some what we call iconic Park City activities. So Park City Rotary has been generous in letting us co-op their Running of the Balls activity. So we're going to have a very mini version of Running of the Balls, and a shot ski, which we decided is going to be predominantly display because we thought it might get a little out of hand in an indoor environment. And then we've got a lovely full-size cutout of Robert Redford that we're going to have as the centerpiece of our photo booth, and the opportunity to dress up like a sun dancer and take your photo. So a lot to do in just a few hours of getting together.
Okay, so when and where is this going to be?
It is Saturday, February 28th at the Park City Community Church, and from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m.
Okay, and is there a cost?
Tickets are $25 for member and $30 for non-members, because we have a lot of former newcomers coming back. We're actually, I just told Elisa, I think as of today is the last day for ticket sales, and I think we've got like 3 spots left. So it's been very, the reception has been very positive. So we're looking forward to having both old and newcomers together.
Okay. If people want more information and to become a member or to look at the calendar, where can they go?
And our website, actually, Park City Newcomers Club.
Okay. .com?
.org.
Yep,
.org. Yes. Okay. It's, you do an easy Google search, we'll take you right there.
All right. Anything else you want to mention? Okay. Elisa and Kathy, thanks so much for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thank you.